Familie Auer.
Auf zu neuen Tatengast.
Nee, Ferry, ich
eine Pokerpartie. Hervorragend. Satteln wir los.
Auf nach Kaffee.
Besetzt.
Das werden wir ja sehen. Schieß das Schloss auf, Ferry.
Hey, was soll das?
Rück zur Seite, Gringo. Wir wollen einsteigen.
Aber nimm ein neues Blatt und misch es gut durch.
Setzen, bitte.
20 Limit! Jetzt! Jetzt! Sitzen jetzt!
Wir haben unsere
Limit.
Grenzen längst
überwunden.
Ich setze alles.
Überwunden.
Riskieren Sie nicht zu viel.
Würden Sie, das auch in Auge, ich mein Colt sagen? Würden Sie, das auch in Auge, mit meinem Colt sagen? Würden Sie, das auch in Auge, mit meinem Colt sagen?
Ja, denn es ist nur ein Spielzeug-Colt. Die Requisiteuse ist auf meiner Seite.
Ich habe den Terminator gewettet, dass ich dich anderes tun sollen.
Eine Pokerpartie, hervorragend!
Kaffee!
Satteln wir los!
Setzen, bitte!
In einer Pestgrube!
Herr Auer! Im Badezimmer steht das Wasser schon knietief!
Strümpfe aus und schwimmen lernen!
Miteinander zum Abschlussball und dann sagt sie,
Sie könnten mich morgen zur Maniküre begleiten. Sie könnten mich morgen zur Maniküre begleiten. Sie könnten mich morgen zur Maniküre begleiten.
Und sich nichts mehr gefallen lassen müssen.
Wir werden es
habe
Ihnen
mir überlegt,
schon
Sie heller zu färben.
Gibt es Käse?
20 Limit! 20 Limit! 20 Limit! 20 Limit! 20 Limit! 20 Limit!
Überwunden. Überwunden.
Würden Sie, das Aug in Aug, in Auge mit meinem Colt sagen?
Der Asphalt und die Steine kochten mit dem Gestank der Abfälle von... sich scheinbar nichts anderes ereignen konnte als der Ablauf. Möglich, dass der Glanz dieser Dinge jetzt ganz heiser.
Still sink or is it wood that sinks and stone floats, or and
auf zu neuen Taten.
Das Ziel sind or.
Sie könnten mich morgen Sag zu meiner Küre begleiten.
Is it worth that?
Also die beiden wollen...
Sinks and stone floats. Or.
Was machst du denn da, René? Warum fütterst du den Hund mit rohen Kartoffeln?
Die nächste Episode hören Sie heute in einer Woche. In der Zwischenzeit wartet die Familie Auer im Internet auf Ihren Besuch. Kunstradio, Radiokunst.
Guten Abend, bei Kunstradio On Air begrüßt Sie Heidi Grundmann. Sie wissen ja, Kunstradio Online finden Sie rund um die Uhr samt Real Audio Files über The Thing Vienna, die ORF-Homepage und die Art Zone von Wien.at. Gestern Abend waren Sie im Depot in Wien und am vergangenen Wochenende bei dem Symposium Time After Media in Hagenberg in Oberösterreich. Arthur und Marie-Louise Kroker. Die beiden leben und lehren eigentlich in Montreal, sind als umstrittene Theoretikerinnen, Schriftsteller und Performer aber so ziemlich dauernd auf Achse, von einem Mediensymposium, das auf sich hält, zum anderen. Arthur und Marie-Louise Kroker erzählen bei diesen Symposien, wenn die Veranstalter die Technik dafür aufbringen, multimedial und vieldeutig Geschichten. Die Texte zu diesen Geschichten, die ihren Anstoß häufig von wirklich, keineswegs nur virtuell lebenden Menschen empfangen, schreiben die Krokers gemeinsam. Die Krokers entwickeln eine Sprache, die uns hilft, durch die vernetzte Welt zu navigieren. Ich nenne sie die neuen Romanschriftsteller, meint zum Beispiel Kathy Ecker. Und andere finden die Kroker-Geschichten und vor allem die Art, wie die Krokers sie präsentieren, nicht ernsthaft, nicht wissenschaftlich genug. Wie auch immer, im Kunstradio können Sie sich heute selbst ein Bild machen. Arthur und Marie-Louise Kroker präsentieren unter dem Titel Hacking the Future eine Radioversion zu ihrem gleichnamigen Buch samt CD. Begleitet, akzentuiert, werden sie dabei von Steve Gibson und David Christian. Die Krokers on Air, Hacking the Future.
Shopping for pain. We're sitting in a cyber coffee bar in San Francisco talking to Denise, a dancer by night and an artist by day. Denise is strikingly beautiful in a delicate porcelain-like way. Tall, slim, with shoulder-length auburn hair, pierced nose, lip, and of course a single eyebrow. At one point she stood up, turned with her back toward us, displaying magnificent tattoos in the form of multicolored angel wings. That went from her shoulder blades down to the small of her back in the colors of the most exquisite medieval stained glass. But all of this was cut by slender red scars split up and down her arms.
We ask about the scars and she tells us about the latest SM scene in the city. It seems these days that in the hip areas of San Francisco, the body cybernetic is out of date, unplugged from outlaw consciousness, and allowed to float off into the east where the tech hype is only now just getting underway. What's really new in San Francisco these days is some pain cut with a lot of healing. It's called slash and burn. Cut long slits down your arms or your legs, really any flesh will do. Pour a bit of gasoline into the wounds and then ignite the flesh. Now don't let it burn too long. We're not talking about flesh arson here, about burning down the whole barn of the body in a massive end of the century conflagration, but about pain with a really recuperative purpose. As Denise explains, the real joy of inflicting pain in your own body lies in the pleasure of the healing process. It's almost addictive. Cut the flesh, pour on gas, watch it burn, and then eagerly anticipate the long, slow healing powers of the body.
The body in San Francisco, then, is all about cynical healing. intensifying the pain of the flesh to get one last hit of the angel wings of bodily healing.
Shopping, branding, flesh. Who says the American frontier with his vision tough and nostalgic of the old West has gone terminal? A friend calls from L.A. to say that branding, flesh on California college campuses is all rage these days. And not just ordinary branding with tattoos. That's passé and artsy and territorial. No one really cares about that anymore. But sign branding. That point where consumer brands finally fly off all the t-shirts, hats, and jeans on city streets and get welded onto the poker end of good old-fashioned cattle branders. CK, M for McDonald's, W for Wranglers, L for Levi's. Heated up liquid red and open flames, and then four at a time are burnt on flesh of waiting bodies. It melts like butter when branding Wranglers start to say, in approving but really odd tones. And of course, the usual. The very next day, California college administrators passed a new edict forbidding in the future open fires on campus. Shopping cyber sex. When I was in Berlin, I met a young American hacker who was living in Europe, a virtual descendant of the lost generation of Americas of the 1920s. He told me an interesting story about his own experience with cyber sex. It seemed that he and a French hacker had created two total immersion bodysuits, algorithmically just right for long-distance sexual feeling, a kind of perfect cyber sex machine in which you slip into the virtual flesh of the data suit in Paris or Berlin and have a remote sexual experience with a person. Friend or stranger, it doesn't make much difference, was zipped into the other data body. People vector their bodies into the cyber sex suits, toggle the switches, and are reported in various stages of sexual ecstasy as they felt the licks and touches and probes from partners who might have been telematically remote, but who were intensely, virtually intimate.
However, a curious thing happened. At the end of the second day, the hacker's cyber partner from Paris sent a message to say that there was a big coding problem. It seemed that a cyber glitch in the programming had occurred at the Paris end of things, and that the system was running on a closed feedback loop. When you zipped on the data suit and plugged into all the waiting orifices of the long-distance remote partner, what you were actually feeling was not a virtual person in Berlin or Paris, but your own body. And it felt great. After all, who knows better how to make you feel good than yourself? The European experiment in cyber sex had turned into a brilliantly autistic feast in cyber masturbation. The young American hacker in Berlin thought he was free of American loneliness, suburban style, only to find himself dumped into the electronic solitude of the masturbating body. Back to Connecticut, back to Blockbuster Video.
Dead dogs and daddy under the Christmas tree. Merry Christmas. You can't go home again? That's definitely not true, because at Christmas you can always only go home. And sometimes it's real grisly. Stories of arthritic eyes and black spots and tumors and cancers and angina and heart attacks for the 12 very merry days of Christmas. Or stories of my best friend Brad, who stabbed his daddy to death and left his body under the Christmas tree until March, with Rex, the good old family dog. Now, Brad was schizoid, but so was his daddy, so I guess it was just a matter of time or circumstance to see which delusion won out. Oedipus revenged or Merry Christmas, Dad, from hell. Remote shopping with my mother, buying her a spanking new Toshiba TV with closed captioning and digital ports galore for a happy multimedia future. And she suddenly says, "Did you see the manager of the store? Well, a few weeks ago, his wife just went down to the highway and threw herself in front of a transport truck, left three children. Sort of sad, I guess. It was just after we drove by the house of the family doctor, the one who had acid thrown in his face during a happy Yuletide season past, by an unhappy patient hiding in the back of his car after a house call. And it was just after our next-door neighbor of many years said goodnight to his wife, had last drink with the boys down at the Legion Hall, turned on all the lights in the house, went down into the basement, and blew his head off with a 410 double-barreled shotgun. 3 months later, his oldest son, with whom he never had good relations anyway, did the very same thing. Drove his girlfriend to work. Getting out of the car, she said, 'See you later.' He said, 'Maybe.' And he was right. Because on the same day, he killed himself over his father's grave. Same gun, different shells."
Happy New Year. It's New Year's Eve at the ballroom of the Hilton Hotel in downtown Montreal. The usual for a nostalgia-flavored party staged by the local oldies radio station. It could be a high school reunion or a one-night cruise on the good ship Lollipop. Nothing new, everything old, except, of course, we are celebrating a new year. Everyone is dressed for the occasion with lots of shimmer and shine, but one outfit really does stand out. It's a woman wearing a sweater that spells out Happy Holidays in large, battery-operated, flashing neon letters. And it's a big inspiration to us all, a kind of talisman taking us into the new year. Fat guys begin to dance on tables. Conga lines form and snake their way around the ballroom floor. Empty champagne glasses are pyramided 30 high on tables filled with sparklers and red, blue, and gold noisemakers. And the pink Cadillacs get us to dance with their golden oldie tunes, from Danny and the Juniors' At the Hop to Elvis's Suspicious Minds and Jerry Lee Lewis's Great Balls of Fire. Of course, no one mentions that Danny slit his throat one night in a motel room and left a note saying he just couldn't sing that song one more time. We all know what happened to Elvis. And Jerry Lee Lewis, well, there is all that talk about his dead wives. A kind of frightening ritual of fake ecstasy and real nostalgia. Happy holidays.
The World Wide Web self. Tired of ASCII consciousness? Try out a World Wide Web self. That's the body electronic equipped for fast travel across the World Wide Web. Neural skin, URL exoskeleton with HTTP navigational beacons coded into its processing sensors. Now, the web self has never known any future but intensive immersion in the profound force fields of data. A species type born in the age of hypertext philosophy and nano theory. The body electronic speaks only multimedia navigational languages, Mosaic, LNET, Netscape. Perfect navigational tools for a body electronic that's already been resequenced into a data probe with a global positioning system fused right into its brain tissue. The Glint Chip Eye. The body electronic comes fully equipped now with a Glint Chip Eye for rapid 3D acceleration across the digital galaxy. Advertised as just perfect for texture mapping, depth queuing, anti-aliasing, and more realistic rendering of 45 megabytes of DRAM, the Glint Chip Eye has the Midas touch of scalability. Located at the very top of the neural skull, the eye electronic has total 360-degree vision, horizon to virtual horizon. It's the electronic eye that finally blinks open to a universe of floating organs. And why not? It's never known a terrestrial world, and certainly has never been dragged down into the gravity of a liquid body, but a strangling thread of the optic nerve. Born for a universe of virtualities and model effects, the Glint Chip Eye has always only known speed and violence, 3D imagery.
No bifocals or trifocals needed here. Never closing, never sleeping, never requiring prosthetics like all of our people's glasses, an eye electronic without myopia, detached retinas, glaucoma, or hardened lenses. Finally liberated from the cosmetology of eyelashes and eyebrows, the Glint Chip Eye opens to its 3D world of artificial life, animated memory, and digital optics. Maybe it needs some artificial tears.
We are people of the third millennium. Einstein's children, born in the white flash of nuclear exterminism, retrofitted for the VR arcades. For us, relativity theory, the search for the top quark of quantum mechanics, and the lonely spin of pulsars in deep space have always been our primal nature. As we come under the pull of the year 2000, we can almost feel the shifting of generations. Mid-20th century body models might have modernist nervous systems, sometimes manage to break through to postmodern technology. Slackers and those of the so-called Generation X were born postmodern, and really they're still part of the chip generation, oscillating between flesh and data. But now there's an entirely new generation, the digital generation, post-chip, pure digital wonders of the third millennium, real arcade cowboys.
Suicide Drive. It's midnight and I'm at a cyber arcade at Pier 39 on the shores of the Pacific in San Francisco. Hottest VR games just in from Tokyo are hardwired to the consoles, and you can go for some really cool rides. Megadeth, Kung Fu Warriors, Neo Geo, Virtual Fighters, where you take your jet fighter squadron out over the Atlantic straight off the deck of bucking aircraft carriers. Or the newest cyber game to be copied to the California Mine, Suicide Drive, where you race a Formula 2 gleaming red Mitsubishi convertible at 200 clicks around the streets of Monte Carlo. Remember Bruce Lee and Enter the Dragon? Well, there's no need now to get bruised and bloodied, let alone have a heart attack before you're 30. The worst you can expect with these cyber games is a little VR nausea or perhaps a few psycho flashbacks.
While the world is still in darkness, with all of its sin, the pleasures of sin.
Outlaw Sex. So if you're feeling lonely, just go up on the net, web over to the neural networks of Outlaw Sex, and you'll suddenly find yourself in the Berlin cyber underground, floating by the dark labyrinth of Potsdamer Platz with its lonely subway station next to the Führer's bunker. Now push on past the Brandenburg gates, do one last check of your fiber optic flesh with its glassy light arrays, and morph into Outlaw Sex. Now the night we were there was bubbling vulvas. Shannon, the ejaculating woman, Merlan, the human vivisection machine, Tony Denise, the world's first virtual transsexual, Claudia, franchise operator of a chain of dungeons, Kate, America's most literate transvestite who likes to say, "I was a man, and then I was a woman, and now I'm neither," and Stellar, with his third arm and high-energy skin.
Bitch Diva was our host. She spent 10 years singing manly show tunes in the U.S. club circuit before she gave it all up for Berlin. With her wigs, beaded dresses, and high heels, that sultry voice, she was a real success. And what a bitch. The song of choice that night was James Brown, "I'm a Sex Machine," which was just right, a real man talking about real sex. Or was it? The Third Reich, hacking the American way. That's Newt Gingrich's A Magna Carta for the Knowledge Age, where Newt and the boys want to hack the future. They want to tame it and train it and hack it for profit. Where Alvin Toffler wants his third wave to drown us out so he can go fishing in cyberspace for coaxial cables, dark fiber, and digital hardware. It's our turn, they all chant, to download and upload and preload and explode what they call cyberspace and the new American dream. But we call it a nightmare. Nothing between the underclass and the virtual class. No public control, just virtual elites. Certainly no liberty for all, just Newton the boys in a perfect little techno bubble. Clean, sterile, and immunized from degrading American flesh. Get wired, they say. Get deregulated and upgraded. Get netted and vetted. Get multitasked and demassified and bitnetted. Get backslashed and backtracked and backlit. Let's surf, merge, and purge. Leave behind the first and second waves and welcome the famous third wave. Las Vegas theme park. Las Vegas is America at the third millennium, a theme park of hope and desolation, where prophets of the Old Testament, Job most of all, sometimes give up the ghost, walk out of the desert, and take their noonday place at the blackjack tables. Along the boulevard of broken dreams, the dusty, windy gutters are filled with crumbling flyers for sex, Las Vegas style. Just outside of Caesar's Palace, gamblers on bended knees make offerings of incense and prayer at the shrine of the American Buddha under the desert sun.
Not Babylon Revisited, but a hybrid Babylon for a hybrid America, showgirls and dying elephants and white tigers and Cirque du Soleil and hot air and cold air to the hyper and total surveillance and gamblers and hustlers and losers and winners and junior mums and dads with strap-on baby pouches. Come to the future, come to the theme park, come to pray one last time all day and all night at America's last and best mall of magic and despair.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Wayne Newton. Now, I'd like to say that it's a pleasure to be here, and somebody told me that it is a new building or something, and I was the first person to perform here. Is that true?
Vocal spasm, sound of virtual reality. Sound spasm, spasm, absent, less spasm, virtual reality.
Tongue spasm. What is the fate of the tongue in virtual reality? Not the old sentient tongue trapped in the mouth cavity, but now an improved digital tongue. A pneumatic tongue that suddenly exits the dark cavity of oral secretions and finally makes its appearance in the daylight. Like the new computer program for Next, Spasm, where the digital tongue is exteriorized from its evolutionary location in the body's biology, actually severed from the mouth. Here the tongue might begin by curling back into the mouth with all the accompanying nasal sounds, but then the tongue suddenly migrates out of the mouth, travels down the chest, goes out the toes, and even sometimes takes libidinal root in the talking penis. Not a surrealistic tongue where objects lose their originary reference, beginning to float in an endless sign slide, but a tongue referent that's actually lost its sound object. Spasm is surrealism inscribed in the flesh of the electronic body.
With this difference, the new digital tongue has finally come alive, acquired virtual sounds from its different bodily reference. The tongue plops onto the chest with a gargled scream. It twins the hyperreal sex organs to the mutant sounds of sex without secretions. It becomes a toe sound, a knee sound, an anal sound. Not so much the tongue anymore as a mediation of breath, lips, and jaw movement, but the digital tongue in a universe of floating lips, chattering eyes, screaming hair, gossipy genitals, and whining feet.
Or maybe it's something very different. Maybe spasm doesn't refer at all to the digital tongue, but to the recombinant tongue. The algorithmic tongue that comes alive as a gene splicer, half gene, half code. That point where the reconfigured tongue fuses with the cold flesh of the recombinant body and begins to speak. Maybe spasm has a broader anthropological importance. Maybe it's an evolutionary breakthrough in the guise of a little computer program that begins to materialize the sounds of the digital body. What we hear in spasm, therefore, are really the first tentative sounds of ourselves as androids, and all of this less a vision of the future than an already nostalgic vision of a telematic history that's already been experienced. Spasm is nostalgia for distortion.
Spasm is speeding down the throats of all the android processors.
Just take that memory and put it aside for a moment.
Tony Denise. I have a recombinant brother, Tony Denise, working the drag queen bars in Tallahassee, Florida. She's taken her memory and put it aside for a moment. Now, she wasn't just a guy who had warp-jumped into a woman's body by surgical cuts, but she was the first of all the virtual bodies. That point where Disney World becomes flesh. A double movement involving an endless remaking of sexual identity and an abandonment of the past.
Tony Denise, the perfect transsexual woman, more perfect than a woman ought to be or can be. Slim hips, large breasts, shoulder-length raven hair with legs as long as Barbie's. Tony Denise, too perfect to be a real woman, the picture-perfect woman, the woman all women think a woman should be. Tony Denise is a man-made woman, a woman made from a man with slim hips, long legs, and raven hair, a man who could say no to cellulite and yes to silicone breasts. Tony Denise, a virtual woman or virtually a woman, she can turn gender signs inside out and play the game of the double sex.
Now, once she became a woman on the outside, she could finally take on the seduction of the male psyche and become the male mind colonizing the female body. Or as Tony Denise likes to say, if I had a clit, I'd have a hard-on.
The computer has no memory. The computer has no memory if by memory mean the presence of political judgment and aesthetic reflection. Perfectly recalling everything in the cold language of data, it's incapable of forgetfulness, of the act of forgetting so necessary for mediating politics and history. In this case, computer memory is always cynical, always about the actual disappearance of embodied memory and the vanishing of aesthetic judgment. Data is the fatal horizon of that stubborn presence we call human memory.
And this is really ironic, since memory is the first sampler machine. Like a liquid combinatorial, human memory operates as a time interceptor, sampling and resampling genetic sequences from the past. For historical time, whether autobiographical or public, has no necessary meaning other than that of a fictional unity onto which are inscribed all of the dominant cultural signs. From the will to nostalgia to the ideological reinvention of the American self. Working in the biological language of cloning, transcription, and sequencing, the will to memory also serves as a retrovirus, sampling the recombinant body of time. As the world's first sampler machine, memories always function like a sequence tag in recombinant genetics, shuffling and reshuffling the random genes of time passing. Speed spasm. Why not music in runes, too? Crash music. A cynical sound so intense, so much a spectral commodity, that like a dying red star it implodes with all the dark density of a violent force field of pure inertia and pure speed, passing through all those drifting cyber bodies. Crash music? That's music as a universal force field of sound that's so seductive because of its fascinating logic. Of an always promised imminent reversibility, pure ecstasy, pure catastrophe. Music then with no past, no determinate meaning, but perfectly defining, perfectly energizing, perfectly hypermodern. Crash music for organs without a body, for sex without secretions, for flared eyes for the body telematic, for neon ears without a skull, for smell patches that can be strapped anywhere on the body algorithmic.
The transistorized face, give me your code. For many years, doctors have been injecting silicone into women's faces, but now a New York City doctor has done it one better. He takes silicone from low-grade transistor fluids and injects it directly into the skin of women, disappearing facial wrinkles. This is the new digitized, transistorized face, the new technological face that rewires memory. No more wrinkles, no
hacking
more tears,
the future. Sie hörten eine Radioversion zu dem gleichnamigen Buch samt CD von Arthur und Marie-Louise Croker. Begleitet wurden sie dabei von Steve Gibson und David Christian. Das Buch ist bei New World Perspectives in Montreal erschienen. Die deutsche Ausgabe wird zurzeit vom Passagen Verlag vorbereitet. Heute in einer Woche im Kunstradio, Radio Sound Art aus Russland. Und jetzt gleich anschließend auf Österreich 1, Zeitton.
Hier eine Mitteilung von Boyce Kasani. Seit dem 4. Februar liegt Radio TNC, das Kult-Online-Radio, in Trümmern. Alles, was von der Homepage übrig bleibt, sind tote Links, ein paar erbärmliche Membranfetzen im GIF-Format und ein Audiofragment. Wahrscheinlich das ehemalige Stationskennzeichen von Radio TNC. Radio Mind, Mike und Cole, die Stars von Radio TNC, sind spurlos im Labyrinth des Net verschwunden. Wir wissen zurzeit nicht, was geschehen ist, aber das Schlimmste ist zu befürchten. Um die Nachforschungen über diesen ersten Webcrash zu koordinieren, haben wir direkt in den Überresten der Homepage von Radio TNC ein SOS-Online-Radio aufgebaut. Informieren Sie uns, wenn Sie irgendwo in einer abgelegenen Zeit Kohlegranulate finden, wenn Sie auf einen verirrten Trailer von Radio TNC stoßen oder wenn Ihnen sonst etwas auffällt, was mit dem Crash von Radio TNC zu tun haben könnte. Sie erreichen uns über die ORF-Homepage, das Thing, oder über die Artzone bei Wien.at oder über Transtopia Innsbruck. Herzlichen Dank für Ihre Mithilfe. Es lebe Radio TNC.